I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Forget the car. The bicycle is the most popular mode of transportation in the world today. Used for commuting to and from work, for hauling cargo and people, delivering mail and messages, and of course for recreation and competition. That's from our guest Jody Rosen's new book, Two Wheels Good, The History and Mystery of the Bicycle. Cyclists should thank Baron Carl von Drais for his two-wheeled running machine that had a seat but no pedal, and debuted in 1817. Now, it took decades of reinvention for the bicycle to look like the ones we ride today. In the meantime, it has transformed life, offering cheap, accessible mobility. In fact, Susan B. Anthony remarked, "Bicycling has done more to emancipate women than anything else in the world." Jody Rosen worked as a bike messenger while a college student and uses his bike to navigate New York City where he lives. And he joins us on Radio Times to share his enthusiasm for cycling and to talk about the bike's evolution and importance. Jody Rosen, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great to be here, Marty. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. You know, I have to say, reading your book took me back to when I was a kid learning to ride a bicycle. I had borrowed my big sister's bicycle trying to figure out how to make two wheels work. And I remember trying over and over and over. And then all of a sudden, I got it. And I was riding a two-wheeled bicycle. And I can remember that feeling of just joy and exhilaration. You write about learning to ride a bicycle in New York City. Do you have a similar memory?
You know, it's funny, my memories of that great moment are a little on the vague side. It's a blurry memory, let's put it that way. But it's definitely an interesting phenomenon, the fact that, you know, the brain works in such a way that, you know, famously we say it's like learning to ride a bike.
That's
because
right.
Once you assimilate that skill, it's nothing that you forget again. It's kind of locked in. And the great thing about bike riding is that feeling of kind of emancipation, of autonomy, that wonderful feeling of, you know, I'm moving fast under my own power, that one experiences first in that kind of primeval moment when you first learn to ride a bike and maybe pedal away from the adult who's been steadying the bike with their hand. You can kind of return to that even as an adult. Every time you mount a bike, there's that sensation of, you know, kind of wee when you're riding down the street. So a nice thing about a bicycle is even if you're a very old person or maybe a middle-aged person like me, you can kind of reconnect to that feeling of joy and exhilaration that you had at that first moment in childhood.
Indeed. Now, you worked as a bike messenger when you were in college. You describe it as one of the more pleasurable jobs you ever had, but it also sounded as if you kind of took your time delivering packages and messages. When you worked as a bike messenger, what was the sense of freedom that you had?
Well, you know, this was when I was at that point I was living in Boston, and I worked as a bike messenger in Boston, Massachusetts, which is a little different than working as a bike messenger in New York. You know, the bike messengers in New York in the 80s and 90s were kind of iconic. These daredevils who were you know, big in popular culture at that period, famous for, you know, threading Manhattan traffic at high speed and getting packages quickly back and forth. And that's in theory what a bike messenger was supposed to do in Boston too. But I kind of took my time. I guess I'd say I wasn't the greatest bike messenger because I was too enthusiastic a cyclist. Like, I kind of was interested in enjoying the ride and kind of soaking up the atmosphere, doing those things you can do as a bicyclist in a city, because the bicycle is a device, it's a means of transport that really connects you to the landscape, to the roadways themselves, and to the surrounding environment in a way that you can kind of have an experience of your surroundings that you can't have when you're, you know, behind a glass windshield in a car, or when you're walking, you're moving at a pace that's neither too fast nor too slow on a bicycle. So I was sort of enjoying that central experience as a city cyclist a little bit too much to be a great bicycle messenger and you know, race the packages on time to the place they were supposed to go.
Yeah. In fact, your boss said, "Don't you want to make some money here?"
Yeah.
and you kind of moved on from there. You do live in New York City, as I mentioned in the introduction. Now, I get nervous as a pedestrian in New York City. I refuse to drive in that city. What kinds of skills do you have to have in order to just navigate as you do on your bicycle in the city?
Well, yeah, I will say it's probably no different than the experience your listeners have in Philadelphia, because unfortunately in the U.S. especially, we live in cities that have inadequate cycling infrastructure. Maybe there are bike lanes, but most of those lanes aren't protected lanes. You know, the infrastructure we have here is a far cry from the ideal, the kinds of infrastructure that are in place in places in Northern Europe, cities like Amsterdam and Copenhagen. And we also, you know, we live in a car culture where cars really, you know, have run of the roads and often impunity, legal impunity, because if cars, you know, motorists strike or even kill cyclists, they often suffer no legal consequences. Wow. So it's a dangerous environment, but I'd be lying if I didn't say it was an exhilarating environment. You know, like part of there is a certain supercharged thrill you get from being in an environment where you're in constant peril, where you're kind of watching out for the car door that is swinging open, where, you know, you're trying to avoid getting doored, as they say, but also worried about like getting struck by the traffic that's on your left. So you pick up certain skills, you learn how to kind of slalom through the traffic, and you really have to be in a state of high alert. A bicycle really focuses your mind, especially when you're in a dense urban environment that's chock-a-block with traffic.
Sure, and you describe a couple of the accidents that you had, and some of them sounded pretty serious. I'd love to have you read a section from the book, it's on page 268, about this sensory experience of bicycling in a city like New York.
Yeah, sure. So this is from a chapter in the book where most of the book is kind of history and, you know, journalism, reportage and you know, some sort of, I guess what you'd call essays. But this is a kind of a memoir chapter where I talk about my own experiences biking, particularly in New York. And the passage in question goes like this. Danger is a sensory intensifier, supercharging the scenery, making everything appear volatile and alive. Viewed from the saddle of a bike, New York reveals its old, ungentrified face, mutating back into the decrepit, volcanic city of yore. Old school hip-hop New York, punk rock New York, jaunty but menacing Damon Runyon New York. That may not be a great argument for steering a bike through the lethal rush hour flow on Queens Boulevard. But for those of us who have bicycling in our bones, the arguments against it are worse. Bike riding can kill you, but to trudge through your days without biking, that's no way to live.
I really like that paragraph. I think kind of summarizes the kind of psychology, I guess, you have to have in order to be to use the bike as your main mode of transportation.
No, it's true. And I guess what I'd say is, you know, for me, it doesn't even really feel like a choice, because I'm so used to being on a bike that when I'm not on one, I feel kind of forgive the expression, but like an amputee. Like I feel like part of my body has been removed, you know, so I definitely feel like when I have to make a commute, you know, on foot, I feel like kind of like I'm, you know,
you're missing
fording
something,
a river,
missing
or
a
walking
limb
through quicksand, you know, and the same when I'm on the subway, it just feels like I'm moving way too slow. And I'm just used to getting around by bike.
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned in the book, is mostly history of the bicycle. So we do have to go back to Baron Karl von Drees. This is 1817. He invented something called the Lausch machine, or the running machine. Describe what it looked like.
Yeah, so the Lausch machine, or as you say, the running machine, was given that name because it was a kind of a proto bike. It had two wheels lined up in a row, and a saddle or seat that stretched between them. But it didn't have pedals, and you propelled it by running. That is, by kind of scooting your feet along the pavement, along the ground, in a kind of an ice skating motion. He likened it to ice skating. So this is exactly like the kind of balance bikes that you may see small children using these days to learn to balance their bodies on the bike. The kind of history's first bike has returned as a kind of starter bike for a lot of kids. You know, we've found what people have discovered is that those balance bikes, where you really learn to, like, you know, keep your weight centered on the bike, work better for learning to ride a bike than, for instance, a regular bike with training wheels, because the real trick to bike riding is learning balance, not pedaling per se.
Well, and I think what's so interesting is as the bike begins to catch on, as you write, it transforms life in in so many dramatic ways. I quoted Susan B. Anthony, but there were also, you know, how bikes politicized life and revealed conflicts between the classes, for instance. Help us understand its power.
Yeah, well, if you think about what the situation was prior to the arrival of what was called the safety bike. This is the bike that was invented, the kind of new bike that was in, that was created around about the mid 1880s, and began to be manufactured en masse in that period. A bike with two equal sized wheels and a rear driven chain drive. The bike that looks like all the bikes that we know today. Prior to that time, the main means of getting around for most people was simply on foot. Yeah. You had to be a wealthier person to afford a faster means of transportation, and that was, you know, usually either on a horse or in an urban environment in a horse-drawn vehicle of some sort, you know, a carriage or a hackney cab. So there was a real difference in class distinctions in terms of who could get around town quickly. you had to have money in order to travel quickly, or otherwise you were stuck on foot. Well, the bicycle, this new safety bicycle, made a fast means of personal mobility affordable to literally millions of people who previously hadn't had the ability to move around town quickly. So you had many working class people suddenly who were out in traffic on bicycles charging around. You crucially, as you mentioned, had women who previously had been regarded, at least in Anglo-American culture, as kind of middle-class Anglo-American culture, as too physically feeble or to move around on their own. And what's more, their movements were circumscribed. It was, you know, it was thought that women of a certain class needed to have a chaperone if they were going to move around the city, because God knows what could happen to them otherwise. So the bicycle brought this kind of supercharged mobility to all kinds of people who previously had not had access to it, and that was truly a social revolution which shook the period of the 1890s, and there was a great deal of consternation among many people about this. It was a period in which moral panic really surrounded the bicycle, and the bicycle was denounced by all kinds of guardians of the old order as this kind of menacing machine of modernity that was changing society in ways that people didn't like.
Well, we have to take a very short break, and just picking up on that, one of the quotes is, the bicycle is the devil's agent, the idea that it was a threat to these traditional Victorian values. We are talking about the bicycle today on Radio Times, a history of the bicycle, also the dangers, the joys, the excitement of bicycles as well. Jody Rosen is our guest. He's a contributing writer to the New York Times Magazine, and he's got a brand new book. It's called Two Wheels Good, The History and Mystery of the Bicycle. He's a lifelong cyclist, as you probably could figure out. We want to hear from the cyclists in our audience. You can email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can always call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with Jody Rosen about the history, the evolution, the joys, the dangers, and the future of the bicycle. Jody, going back to when bicycles and horses were, in a sense, kind of seen as competition with each other, it does remind me about the sort of conflict and, I think, sometimes bad feelings between cyclists today and cars on the road. There seem like there are a lot of parallels between these forms of and modes of transportation.
Yeah, very much. I mean, the history of the bicycle is really a history of conflict and culture wars of various times and various kinds, and the most enduring and constant of those conflicts is this kind of debate over the right to the roadways. You know, right from the beginning, the bicycle arrived in a world that was, as we've said, dominated by horse-drawn vehicles. So the bicycle was regarded as a kind of illicit or illegitimate machine, which neither had a right to, you know, ply the roadways, nor did it have a right, it was thought, to be on the sidewalk, because after all, that was the domain of pedestrians. There was this kind of brief period, you know, especially in the late 1880s and through the 1890s, when in the United States and cities of Western Europe, elsewhere, the bicycle, you know, boomed, and it really had dominion over the roads. But that was an extremely short-lived period, because after that, we had the rise of, especially in the United States, the rise of the automobile. We got the Ford Model T and Model A. Suddenly, we had a car culture, and bicycles were marginalized by statute, among other things. It was really, the bicycle was very much like, you know, moved to the side of the road and moved to the side of our culture, if you will. So today, cyclists find themselves in a situation not unlike, you know, of conflict, just like the situation that cyclists found themselves when they were kind of, you know, jostling for elbow room with horse-drawn vehicles. Now, of course, cars kind of run the roads, and as we talked about earlier, it can be dangerous. Sure. and difficult for cyclists in cities and other areas. There's just not the room for them.
Well, let me read an email from Andrew. He says, my wife and I spent 2 weeks in Germany earlier this summer, in Berlin, in Dresden, and Munich. There are bicyclists everywhere. There are bike lanes separated from automobile lanes. One reason is that Germans have used planning and tax policies to prevent sprawling development. But it seems as if other countries, Jody, have been able to better figure out how bicycles and cars can share the road.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll say this, in Europe, Western Europe, certainly, the car culture is obviously huge, but slightly less entrenched than it is here. You know, they have denser cities. They don't have the kinds of sprawl that we have often in our cities now. Places like Philadelphia and New York are really European style cities, so that they're really ideal environments for the kind of infrastructure that your listener is describing there. But I guess the main thing to be said about the difference between Europe and the U.S., these cities in Europe and those in the U.S., is it's a real policy priority there. You know, leaders, politicians, policymakers have taken decisions to make more room for bicycles, and crucially, to kind of make it less comfortable for cars to be in cities. The mayor of Paris, Anne Hidalgo, is a zealous advocate of cycling, and she especially took advantage of the situation in the pandemic to institute changes to the city there, such that many parts of central Paris are, she plans to make them, you know, virtually car-free zones. Yeah. And it's really transformed that city. So it's something that can happen here, and there's good reason for it, certainly, because it has, you know, great public health effects. It's good for our struggles with climate change, but it's a thing that is going to involve activism on the part of advocates of alternative forms of transportation, and some tough decisions to be made by policymakers and politicians.
Sure, and there are certainly activists in this city, as there are in many other parts of the world. Let me read an email from Bill. I commuted by bicycle in my home city of Philadelphia for 20 years, and it never lost its element of fun. I moved from the city 10 years ago. I'm not sure I feel safe bicycling in an urban environment now because of the higher number of distracted drivers all on their phones. And I was going to ask you about that, Jody, because it feels like, you know, people running red lights in their cars. We've done shows about this. The distracted driver problem is a serious problem.
It's definitely true that the distracted driver problem is a serious problem. But, you know, the experts who look at these issues really point to larger systemic issues, that it's about the design of the roads. And it's about simply, you know, having so many cars on the roads in the first place. You know, the pandemic, actually, there was a huge bicycle boom that was brought on by the pandemic, but there was also a motoring boom. Many people in cities who didn't own cars previously bought cars because of their interest in a socially distanced form of transportation. You know, they didn't want to be on public transport anymore. So that's a problem. I mean, I think it's anecdotal, but it definitely feels more dangerous for me in New York. And I think it's largely because there are simply more cars on the road. And the roads themselves are poorly designed. They're designed in ways that make them more dangerous for all concerned, including motorists. So these are problems that really need to be tackled at a you know, as I say, at the level of the policymaker, as opposed to, you know, pinning it on any individual driver and what they happen to be doing with their cell phone. That's a problem, but the larger problems are systemic and systematic.
Here's an email from Elizabeth. I love to ride my bike and try to make sure I do as many errands as possible rather than use fossil fuels. Good for the environment and good for the psyche. Yes, we are talking about bicycles today on Radio Times. Jody Rosen has been giving us a short history of the bicycle. He's the author of a new book called Two Wheels Good, The History and Mystery of the Bicycle. He's a lifelong cyclist and a contributing writer for New York Times Magazine. And again, you can join us. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. We have Stephanie Ford, who has joined us. She is founder of the Pedal Posse Divas Cycling Club, which is here in Philadelphia. She is also owner of the Coffee, Creams, and Dreams Cafe, which is in the Fairmount section of the city. And Stephanie Ford, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you with us. Tell us about the founding of the Pedal Posse Divas. What was the genesis of that?
So the genesis was me joining a cycling group, going out for my first 25-mile ride, which I thought I could do because I had been cycling alone for a while, and getting left on the trail. It was a trail, so I couldn't get lost, but I didn't like the feeling of being left behind. When I did finally get to it, and I decided I'm going to start my own group because I didn't like the feeling and didn't want people to feel that way. So I created, kind of called on some friends, and we started biking, and then I said, let's come up with a name, because we're this group. So we came up with a name collectively and used Facebook as a platform to post rides and things like that. And it's been 9 years.
Wow.
And it's all women. It's all women, and we have a good time.
And you have a great name, Pedal Posse Divas. So that was a great move on your part. As you said, you didn't like the idea, the feeling of being left behind. But it sounds like for you, biking is also a social thing besides being for exercise and for being out in the great outdoors.
Yes, definitely social. We do a lot of charity rides, a lot of bike tours for charity rides where we're donating to different causes. We also, we bike weekly, sometimes mainly on Saturdays or Sundays, and sometimes during the week. Sometimes there's a large group, and sometimes there's just a few of us, but there's scheduled rides. And sometimes we'll call on each other separately and say, let's just kind of do a ride. Sometimes we do an overnight trip in Bethany Beach every April. We rent a house and just make a weekend of it to do their bike tour, but also just to kind of hang out. There's a ride. Some of us are doing a ride in Jamaica in November, a 3-day ride. But we'll also be on vacation, so we'll get to sit on the beach afterwards.
Oh, God, so, that sounds like a lot of fun. Jody, let me get you back in on the conversation. Are you more like a solo bicycle rider, or do you do this as a group as well, or both?
Yeah, no, I am kind of a solo commuter utility cyclist, although I should say, like, it's not always. Like, I ride around a lot with my wife and kids. So I have an 18-year-old, and he zips around New York like a crazy man on his own bike. Sometimes he lets me ride with him, although that's maybe a little embarrassing for him. My wife and I really get around by bike. And I have a 9-year-old who hasn't yet learned to ride a bike. He's kind of been resistant to that, but I have a seat on the back of my bike for him. So the group that I ride in is, you know, my family. But, you know, props to anybody who rides in big groups. That's an incredibly fun way to experience cycling, with a long a long and illustrious history. And it's definitely, that's one of the nice things about bicycles. Is it's really you really can socialize while you ride. It's not like, you know, it's hard to take a ride on in a caravan of cars with your friends and have a conversation while you're doing it, but you can do that on a bike.
Absolutely. And Stephanie, you have a child, a son, I believe, who's really gotten into biking, correct?
Yes, actually, I have three sons, but my oldest son, who's 30-something, he has taken up this love of cycling. He's the opposite of, he does ride with the group. He's the opposite of me, though. He likes to ride fast. I think it's a man thing sometimes. He likes to ride really fast and get up the hill as fast as he can. And I just like to, you know, smell the flowers and look at the trees and things like that. But he really has gotten into it. Probably in the last 9 months. So I can see the early addiction that I had to cycling and wanting the gear and all these tools on your bicycle. So, you know, and I keep saying, you're just, you know, like it took you this long to fall in love with cycling. I've been doing it forever.
Well, when did your addiction start, Stephanie, to use your words?
It's been over 20 years, and I used to just bike with a friend, and we would bike in Valley Green, just along Forbidden Drive forever. We never touched Kelly Drive or any of those things. And it just used to be her and I, just back and forth. And then I decided once I got a road bike, because a bicycle shop told me the bike that I was riding was a department store bike, quote unquote. And I was like, I'm riding a department store bike? Okay. So I got a road bike and I thought like, okay, I'm this real cyclist now. So it started from there, I think, really the addiction once I got my first road bike and all of the other stuff came with it. So,
yeah,
but
yeah,
I've been biking for a long time outside of being a kid and biking. So it's a little different now, though.
And Jody, do you go for fancy bikes, or what kind of bike do you ride?
No, I ride, you know, pretty basic bike, what they, you know, might call a roadster or a cruiser bike, a real simple, kind of looks like one of those, you know, just classic bikes you might have ridden in like the 1930s, you know, very, very, very simple. A few hundred bucks. I think, you know, I've had too many bikes stolen to sink a lot of cash into any one bike. I tend to beat my bikes up a little bit. So I'm the furthest thing from one of those, you know, gearhead fetishists who's always got to have like the great titanium frame or whatever. That's just not my way. But again, you know, if you're into that, more power to you. There's all kinds of bikes out there, and you know, there's one for everybody.
Stephanie, I know you are working with girls, young girls, to sort of help them get into biking, but also throw in some kind of STEM science knowledge and experience. What is that all about?
Yes, I'm putting together a program that actually haven't put together, just haven't put it out in the atmosphere per se. It's called Saddle and STEM. So it's a program that will teach girls STEM, but also teach them the correlation between cycling and STEM, where we will have volunteer mechanics come in and help them put the bikes together. And at the end of the program, they will get to keep the bikes, and it will be a big ride. And, you know, families will be invited and perhaps to use the Indigo bikes for one people that don't have bikes. And I wanted to do it with as an after-school program just around the city, probably starting in the fall and ending in the spring. So there's an educational aspect, but a fun aspect as well.
No, that's great. Let me read an email from Jorge, who says, are we seeing a shift in cycling popularity as many downtowns change and people work from home? Jody, can I toss that first to you? Do you see a shift in cycling?
Yeah, I mean, there's been, if the history of, you know, cycling in the U.S., for instance, is a history of booms and busts. So there's been, you know, phases where you know, many millions take to cycling, and then it kind of recedes for a little while. But the bicycle has a way of always coming back. And we're definitely in a peak period of bicycle riding, not only here, but really globally. Some of this was engendered by was brought on by the pandemic. And as I said, people seeking new socially distant form of transportation. But, you know, bikes are just really, like, in cities, they're just, like, the best way, most convenient and most pleasant way to get around. And I think that the rise of the e-bike, you know, these bicycles with, you know, a pedal assist, what they call a pedal assist electric motor, is really changing the landscape and bringing, you know, many people to the bicycle who might not have in the past, both because it's, you know, it's kind of easier to bike one of those things. Like when you ride, you can ride uphill, you know, very easily when you have a little extra boost from that motor. But also, it's more convenient and maybe more practical. Like for instance, if you don't want to like bike across, have a big commute to some sort of meeting that you might have and show up dripping with sweat, well, right, the e-bike is for you because you can show up, you know, in your nice suit of clothes and look the part.
Well, in fact, we'll be talking about e-bikes in just a couple of minutes. Let me go back to you, Stephanie Ford. Do you have a favorite route in the Philadelphia area to bike?
I don't have a favorite. We tend to use the trail a lot. I like to go all the way up the trail, the Schuylkill River Trail, up into Valley Forge Park. That's a nice route with no traffic. I personally just don't like to do it all the time because I just kind of like to do different things. I like to turn a corner and see a nice house or some flowers and things like that. So I really enjoy riding on the street, although as safe as riding on a trail. I enjoy being able to just kind of get out into the different neighborhoods and to be seen by everybody. You get a lot from, you know, little girls or little boys like, oh, look, mommy, bicyclist, and things like that. So I like that part of it. And a lot of people holler like, I should be riding with y'all. And yep, sure, come on.
Oh, that's great. Do you all wear not uniforms, but like jerseys, shorts, things that identify yourself?
Yes, we have our own kits. We have our own kits that we wear, of course, and a whole bunch of other kits. But yes, we do have a quote-unquote uniform.
You do have a quote-unquote uniform. Well, Stephanie Ford, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And she's founder of the Pedal Posse Divas Cycling Club here in Philadelphia, also owner of the Coffee, Creams, and Dreams Cafe. That's in the Fairmount section of Philadelphia. Jody Rosen staying with us for the rest of the hour. Again, contributing writer for New York Times Magazine, author of a new book we've been talking about, Two Wheels Good, The History and Mystery of the Bicycle. And yes, we'll be talking about e-bikes after this very short break. In the meantime, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. You can email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. Lots to talk about after this very short break. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with our guest Jody Rosen. He is a biking enthusiast, and he's got a new book, Two Wheels Good, The History and Mystery of the Bicycle. The story of the bicycle begins with Baron Karl von Drais in 1817 with his two-wheeled running machine and ends with the growing popularity of electric bikes. That's what the book is about. Also, Rosen describes his adventures and misadventures navigating the streets of New York. And joining us now to talk about e-bikes is Kimberly Bezek. She's an e-bike rider, founder of the Narberth Cycling Club, a biking club, and she advocates for biking for transportation in the suburbs, co-founder of Shift Sustainable Goods in Narberth, which is on the outskirts of Philadelphia. Kimberly Bezek, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
So how long have you been a biking enthusiast?
I've been riding my bike pretty regularly since around 2007 when I got my first job out of grad school. And flash forward to now, and I'm on my bike every single day.
So that is your main mode of transportation?
Yeah. I mean, as Jody alluded to earlier, I've found, you know, growing up and living near and around cities, it's the best way to get around. I don't have to stress about the parking dilemma, moving the car, keeping it parked, all of that. And it's allowed my family to stay one car for maybe 13 years now.
Did you have to be convinced about an e-bike?
I did, yes. I was, you know, trying to check around as a mom with a toddler, with a traditional bike, with the bike seat and the basket, lugging around groceries and all of the things. And, you know, it started feeling hard. It took all the joy out of it. And my husband had been nudging me to consider what's called a cargo bike, and then eventually adding an electric assist to it. And once I finally gave in and that happened, it was such a game changer for me. It sparked joy, you know, every mile.
Well, you sent us a picture, and this is you. I assume this is your e-bike, your assist bike, and there are four little kids in a giant bin, I would say, on the back of your bike. And then also attached to your contraption is another bike for a child. Is that how you get around?
Yeah. So we have two daughters, and I think in that specific picture, I'm also carting around my two nephews that were in town visiting. And amazingly enough, our cargo bike can transport more kids around than my car. So the Madsen Cycles cargo bike can carry up to 600 pounds, and I have used it to carry everything from pallets to lawnmowers to playhouses. Like, I've carted so many things home with it that I would never be able to get home in my regular vehicle. And, you know, as Jody said, it's just, no matter the most mundane task, it just sparks so much joy. You know, I feel so connected to my surroundings and just so much more alive than if I was doing these ordinary tasks in a car.
It must also attract attention.
Yes, yes, certainly. You know, I started Narber Cycling Club because a mom in the neighborhood saw me carting my kids around in this cargo bike, and she said, "Oh my gosh, I really want to do this with you, but I wouldn't even know where to start. Can I just ride along with you one day? Maybe you could start a club." And I realized in that moment, I was like, wow, you know, there's so much potential in this community for Narber. It's being compact. It's really ideal to get around by a bike, but people are feeling a little intimidated about sharing the street with cars. So I started Cycling Club in 2017, and now we've grown to about 600 members.
Wow.
And it's all about doing these very fun, kind of zany social rides that get people out on their bike and get them feeling confident about ditching the car.
Jody, let me get you back in on the conversation. I do want to talk more about e-bikes, about are we this phenomenon. Is it worldwide from what you can figure out? Do we have Jody? Okay, I'm sorry, Jody.
Hello?
Go ahead. Yeah, I'm sorry. We just missed the very beginning. Yeah go ahead.
Okay. I was saying that it is a global phenomenon in China, which for many decades through the 20th century was known as the kingdom of the bicycle because there were so many, there were hundreds of millions of bicycles there. And then that country took a kind of a radical turn towards car culture in this century. China is kind of returning to the bicycle through the e-bike. So the latest statistics indicate that there are, you know, something on the order of 300 million e-bikes on the roads of China alone.
Wow.
For instance, and it's definitely I would say the biggest innovation in bicycle engineering and design, the biggest thing to hit the bike world maybe since the invention of that safety bicycle in the 1870s and 1880s. I think it's really a game changer that's going to transform the relationship of many, many people to bicycles and allow, for instance, not only younger people or, you know, parents with young children to get on a bike and cart the children and other stuff around, but bring older people back to bicycles because it allows for a little easier ride.
Well, I wonder too whether there is more safety in numbers. So literally, the more people you have on bicycles or with these cargo bikes that Kimberly was talking about, the safer it is for everyone. Maybe even including cars. I don't know, but safer it is for other cyclists on the road, Jody.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like, you know, there definitely is a strength in numbers aspect to this stuff. But again, you need the infrastructure. Like, you know, there's definitely, you know, cycling activists have staged protests for many decades where they kind of flood the streets with bicycles. This is the kind of premise behind the critical mass movement, which sort of in a guerrilla fashion takes over city streets at various, once a month, famously in many cities, and kind of travels en masse through the streets. But in order to make that not just a once a month thing, but an everyday commuting thing, you simply need better laws. But it's true that the more people that get out on bikes, the better better. And crucially, the more people that kind of move from cars to bikes, the better. And I think that's a thing where the e-bike can really play a big role there, because yeah. people who are, for instance, used to commuting in a car, who've graduated to e-bikes, you know, their testimonies you hear over and over again, people saying, oh, wow, it's just so much more pleasurable, so much more pleasant. I'm sitting in traffic, not nearly as much, and, you know, I'm kind of getting good exercise out in the open air. So yes, there's truth in what you say. The more, the merrier.
The more, the merrier. And going back to you, Kimberly, and I bicycle on an irregular basis, but nonetheless, I worry about being on my bicycle in traffic. Just when we talked about this earlier with Stephanie and also with Jody about just the level of distracted driving and people that literally just not paying attention to the road.
Yeah, I mean, generally, I have had really positive experience biking. I've lived in D.C. I've lived in New York City. I'm from New Orleans. I think biking on an unusual-looking bike has created an opportunity to have some more positive interactions than, you know, some folks might have sometimes. But generally speaking, I've found that the drivers are becoming increasingly more aware, and it really does tie into the fact that more people are inspired to hop on the bikes. And the e-bikes, exactly like Jody said, it's, you know, my background, I'm an occupational therapist by profession, and we're all about keeping people doing their enjoyable tasks. And the e-bikes are allowing people to stay on bikes longer. Or if they've left biking because it's gotten too hard or that hill's gotten too intimidating, it gets them back on that bike. And so the e-bike really is what, not only is it like a tool for climate action, it's just a tool for like building these really connected, livable communities.
Here's a comment from Connie. I'll put this to you, Kimberly. Then we'll have to say goodbye. She says, I have a disability that makes walking very hard, but I'm thinking about an e-bike and excited that it may help me get around. You said you're an occupational therapist. Is that something Connie should take seriously?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, my mother-in-law has some balance issues, and she transitioned to a trike that has a basket. It's essentially a cargo bike for her, and my husband added a pedal assist to it, and it has kept her pedaling and independent and confident. Again, there's so many different shapes and sizes of bikes out there now that really do keep creating a much more inclusive bicycling community than we've ever had. You're seeing many more, you know, like the cycling club does cater to all ages, all abilities, all skill levels. And we do get folks reaching out to us all the time, you know, with just different requests or questions. So yeah, absolutely.
Well, I thank you for joining us today on Radio Times. Kimberly Bezak, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. She's an e-bike rider, founder of the Narberth Cycling Club, Narberth just outside of Philadelphia. Jody Rosen staying with us for the rest of the hour. Again, we've been talking about his new book, Two Wheels Good, The History and Mystery of the Bicycle. Let me read an email from Joanne, who says, where I live, twisty back roads designed for horse and buggy abound. They're extremely narrow. Close calls with cars are common. The roads are treacherous, even without cyclists. Many blind spots for both drivers and bike riders. And I guess, I mean, it should be said that, you know, we don't have a world necessarily designed for all modes of transportation.
No, definitely not. And, you know, we're going to have to, you know, make some compromises and take some, you know, prudent decisions about these things. I certainly, you know, those of us who are, you know, cycling advocates are not, we don't want to ban cars outright. That's not realistic, unfortunately. But it's definitely the case that for the greater good, the fewer cars, the better, especially in cities. You know, a dense urban environment like Philly or New York is really an ideal environment to take steps to reduce the amount of motor vehicle traffic. Other places, yeah, you need cars, but also you can, if we had better public transport of all kinds, you know, railroads and things of that nature, we could also reduce the number of cars on the roads in suburban and rural communities. So there's a lot of steps to be taken, and these things need to be looked at holistically. And honestly, they can have great knock-on effects, both economic and certainly, you know, for matters of public health and, sure.
And
climate
and climate
sustainability.
As well. Yeah. Let me ask you about this daredevil that you, daredevil cyclist, Danny McCaskill, Scottish, and the kinds of tricks that he does on his bicycle. Can we do justice to that on the radio?
It's a little hard. I invite people to go to go to YouTube and or Google and just type in the name Danny McCaskill. He's kind of the world's most famous stunt cyclist at this point. He puts together these amazing videos showcasing his riding. He comes out of a tradition known as street trials, which is a kind of like a, you know, sort of freestyle trick cycling involving great feats of balance, jumping from great heights and landing, kind of moving through urban and rural landscapes, doing wild tricks. Danny McCaskill has done things like bike vertically up a tree, bike on top of the stanchions of a very high wrought iron fence. He's amazing. But what the thing, the kind of larger point that's made in that chapter is that cycling itself is a kind of balancing act.
Sure.
You know, the very nature of bicycling, of keeping yourself upright on the bike, is a sort of stunt. And the connection between cycling and flying, getting air, as it were, like Danny McCaskill does, has a long history. The Wright brothers were bicycle mechanics and manufacturers, and the kind of crucial connections they made, the crucial breakthroughs that they made in order to invent their airplane, were made because they understood how bicycles worked, and they realized that a plane, like a bicycle, could be an inherently unstable mechanism that relied on the, you know, sort of the balance of the pilot. So we have the bicycle to thank for, in many ways, for the age of aviation as well.
Do you live in New York City? Do you have a special time of day when you like to ride your bicycle in the city?
No, really, all day long. I mean, I rode it this morning, you know, just to the coffee joint to get my coffee. Drop my, my younger kid at camp. I ride it all day long. Now, obviously, when we experience these heat waves like we've had this summer, and we unfortunately will be having increasingly, it becomes a little bit more punishing to ride one's bike. But I'll ride my bike rain or shine all day long. It's certainly most pleasant, I guess, maybe early in the morning and late at night when there's fewer cars on the road. I'll say that.
You'll say that. Well, I do thank you, Jody Rosen, for joining us today on Radio Times.
Oh, my pleasure. It's been fun.
Fun for us as well. And again, contributing writer for New York Times Magazine, author of this book that we have been talking about called Two Wheels Good, The History and Mystery of the Bicycle. Also talked with Stephanie Ford, founder of the Pedal Posse Divas Cycling Club, and Kimberly Bezak, founder of the Narberth Cycling Club. Go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times under programs. You can also download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray Bessler. I'm Marty Mosto Cohen. We close things out with Queen and Bicycle Ride. That was Queen's Bicycle Race from their 1978 album called Jazz. Let me tell you about an additional Radio Times podcast. The archives of Radio Times are filled with thousands and thousands of interviews that frankly never see the light of day. So on Saturdays, we are offering an additional podcast, a bonus podcast, if you will, and it airs Saturday morning. Tomorrow, you'll get to hear my interview with Norman Lear. He just turned 100 years old. I talked to him a number of years ago. He was really charming. So check it out, Radio Times Archive Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.